This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
Welcome to the award-winning Folk Music Hour.
Hello, it's David here. You know, humour is our only defence against the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, and amusing things are vital, like that slightly tasteless pop ballad about the need to micturate nocturnally. I can assure the multi-tracking Shirley Sherban that the problem is even greater for males, but let's move on from passing water to a passing glance at some more tongue-in-cheek traditional, at least at first.
My lad's a canny lad, he works doon the pit. He never comes to see us unless he wants a bit. I asked him would he marry us, you should have seen him wince. I think I've lost me canny lad, I've never seen him since.
Rachel Unthank, and that northern sense of humour surfaces again with Sheila Stewart.
Friends, I have a sad story, a very sad story to tell. I married a man for his money, but he's worse than the devil himself. For when Mickey comes home, I get battered. He batters me all black and blue, and if I say a word, I get scattered from the kitchen right bin to the room. So I'll go and I'll get blue blazing blind drunk, just to give Mickey a warning. And just for spite, I will stay out all night and come rolling home drunk in the morning. Oh, but whiskey, I ne'er was a lover. But what can a poor woman do? I'll go and I'll drown all me sorrows, but I wish I could drown Mickey too. So I'll go and I'll get blue blazing blind drunk, just to give Mickey a warning. And just for spite, I will stay out all night and come a rolling home drunk in the morning.
That's Sheila Stewart, rueful humour about a serious problem. I tried to find bleezing on the interweb. All I found was bleeze with a Z, a Scottish expression to brag or talk officiously, something a drunk might do, I suppose. We've twice before explored the funny side of folk, sometimes LOL, sometimes quite grim, but wrapped up in the idea we all have from time to time that laughter is the best medicine, a way of coping with the vicissitudes of life. After all, you can sing the blues with gusto and feel better for it. And if we can laugh at the train driver on the Rock Island line fooling the toll or fees collector as to his cargo, maybe a hard row to hoe becomes easier. Here's David Bromberg.
Well, some gal told me today, boy, you're wasting your life away. She said, it's bad how I spend my time. She said, I'll never make a dime. I told her that I like to sleep late in the morning. I don't like to wear no shoes. I make love to women while I'm living. Get drunk on the bottle of booze. Now I know I can't keep living this way, being broke from day to day. I gotta stop this running around, get a job and settle down. Oh, but I like to sleep late in the morning. I don't like to wear no shoes. I make love to the women while I'm living. Get drunk on a bottle of booze.
David Bromberg likes to sleep late in the morning. I should be so lucky, I can't seem to help waking before six for that first cup of tea, bringing us back to the problem we began with. The clever Aussie lyricist Enda Kenny seems like me to hate anything but a cup of Ceylon tea.
Is it perfume? Is it tea? Whatever it is, it does nothing for me. Should I drink it or dab it on? Can I swap it for a coffee? Or has all the water gone? It is hot, it is wet, it is eau de toilette. Is it from the house of Lipton or Chanel? I only want a cup of tea, not this stuff you've given me. If you think I'm going to drink it, go to help me, someone. Call a doctor, call a nurse, call an ambulance, I'm poisoned and I think it's getting worse. I only wanted a cup of tea, but I fear that my last mouthful will be the death of me. It is hot, it is wet, it is eau de toilette. To my mind it is more toilette than eau. If you want to spoil your day, add the oil of Earl Grey. I'm reliably informed it's bergamot. What a mouthful. Is it perfume? Is it wee? Whatever it's supposed to be, it doesn't taste like tea. Should I drink it or dab it on? Can I swap it for a coffee? Or has all the water gone? It is hot, it is wet, it is eau de toilette. Is it Twinings, is it Tetley? Let me see. Go ahead, make my day, but please don't make me drink Earl Grey. All I want is a proper cup of tea.
Hear, hear, the entertaining Enda Kenny. Tall tales have amused us for generations.
As I sat down one evening within a small cafe, a 40-year-old waitress to me these words did say,
I see that you are a lager and not just a common bum, 'cause nobody but a lager stirs his coffee with his thumb.
My lover was a lager, there's none like him today. If you'd pour whiskey on it, he would eat a bale of hay.
Well, he never shaved his whiskers from off of his horny hide. He'd just drive them in with a hammer and bite them off inside.
My lover came to see me upon one freezing day. He held me in a fond embrace which broke three vertebrae.
Well, he kissed me when we parted so hard that he broke my jaw. I could not speak to tell him he'd forgot his Mackinaw.
I saw my lager leaving, sauntering through the snow, going gravely homeward at 48 below.
The weather, it tried to freeze him, it tried its level best. At 100 degrees below zero, he buttoned up his vest.
It froze clean through to China, it froze to the stars above. At 1,000 degrees below zero, it froze my lager love.
And so I lost my lover, and to this cafe I come, and here I wait till someone stirs his coffee with his thumb.
The wonderful Weavers, fondly remembered on the Folk Music Hour, though perhaps Ronnie Gilbert could have voiced the waitress who tells the story of the frozen lager.
I bet you they won't play this song on the radio. I bet you they won't play this new song. It's not that it's awful. controversial, just that the f***ing words are awfully strong. You can't say on the radio or you can't even say I'd like to you someday unless you're a doctor with a very large. So I bet you they won't play this song on the radio. I bet you they dare well program it. I bet you they're Ingle program directors will think it's a load of horse.
Python-esque humour from Eric Idle, amusing songwriter par excellence. In America, the same problem is elucidated with guitar and mandolin by Matt Wattroba.
You can sing just as bad as you want to. You can growl like an old brown bear. You can screech like a cat. You can even sing flat. But you can't say f- on the air. No, you can't say f- on the air. No, you can't say f- on the air. You can do anything that you want to, but you can't say on the air. Did you ever watch TV baseball? They're putting their hands everywhere. They scratch at their clothes, they pick at their nose, but they don't say on the air. No, you can't say on the air. No, you can't say on the air. You can do anything that you want to, but you can't say on the air. We're spending the evening at grandma's. The children and babies are there. We're watching TV and the blood's running free, but you can't say on the air. No, you can't say on the air. No, you can't say on the air. You can do anything that you want to, but you can't say on the air.
Matt Wattroba from his Cy Khan funny song sing-along record. Cy Khan, who just turned 80, was a civil rights union and community organiser for over 50 years. He's a folk singer and a songwriter too. Grab your nearest preschooler and have a go at this Cy Khan number sung by Fran Friedman.
Mama, she got me a rubber blubber whale. Mama, she got me a rubber blubber whale. How I love my rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber whale, blubber whale, rubber blubber, rubber blubber whale. Well, sister, she wanted my rubber blubber whale. Sister, she wanted my rubber blubber whale. Well, you know I really love her, but she cannot have my rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber whale, blubber whale, rubber blubber, rubber blubber whale. So mama went and bought another rubber blubber whale. Mama went and bought another rubber blubber whale. How I love my rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber whale, blubber whale, rubber blubber, rubber blubber whale. I took a bath with my rubber blubber whale. Went splish splash with his little rubber tail. How I love my rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber whale, blubber whale, rubber blubber, rubber blubber whale. Went to the ocean with my rubber blubber whale. Took him to the beach in his little yellow pail. How I love my rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber, rubber blubber whale, blubber whale, rubber blubber, rubber blubber whale,
blubber whale.
Getting littlies to sing silly songs helps develop their language skills. There's nothing kids like more than funny songs, I tell you. I sang the Big Rock Candy Mountain to older kids many a time. Without the cigarettes and alcohol, of course. Their favourite line is about hanging the jerk who invented work. I can't resist straying wide of folk arrangements here because some humour has jazz backings. like Alan Sherman, who was trying to resist another British invasion in Pop Hates the Beatles.
My daughter needs a new phonograph. She wore out all the needles. Besides, I broke the old one in half. I hate the Beatles. She says they have a Liverpool beat. She says they used to play there. Four nice kids from off of the street. Why didn't they stay there? What is all the screaming about? Fainting and swooning. Sounds to me like their guitars could use a little tuning. The boys are from the British Empire. The British think they're keen. If that is what the British desire, God save the Queen. No daughter of mine can push me around. In my house, I'm the master. But when the Beatles came into town, gad, what a disaster. Little girls in sneakers and jeans destroyed the territory. 'Twas like some of the gorier scenes from West Side Story. Of course my daughter had to go there. The tickets are cheap, she hollers. I was able to pick up a pair for $47. When the Beatles come on the stage, they scream and shriek and cheer them. Now I know why they're such a rage. It's impossible to hear them. Ringo is the one with the drum. The others all play with him. It shows you what a boy can become without a sense of rhythm. There's Beatle books and t-shirts and rings and one thing and another. To buy my daughter all of these things, I had to sell her brother. Back in 1776, we fought the British then, folks. Parents of America, it's time to do it again, folks. When they come back, here's how we'll begin. We'll throw them in Boston Harbor. But please, before we toss them all in, let's take them to a barber.
Alan Sherman with a daughter befuddled by Beatlemania. Also with jazzy music, but with a folk heart, Andrew London in a later era has a different difficulty with his daughter, her metallic boyfriend.
My daughter's got a boyfriend, not particularly blessed. With intellect, it seems he still has trouble getting dressed. His trouser legs are frayed, he wears them halfway down his bum. Sometimes we yell out fire just to watch him try and run. Try harder, dear, my wife says, try bonding with this lout. So I loosen up my belt and let my wife runs flap about. My daughter's got a boyfriend and we like to shoot the breeze. Two good old home boys rapping with our trousers round our knees. Got a boyfriend, he speaks a strange argo, a peculiar sort of English, not a dialect I know. Yo, sup, he says, and I agree, the interest rate is high, so I offer him a drink. He seems a chatty sort of guy. Red, he says, why sure, says I, this Merlot's hard to beat. Chair bro, he says, and so of course I offer him a seat. My daughter's got a boyfriend and we get along just fine. He doesn't speak much English, but he seems to know his wine.
Boy.
boyfriend.
My daughter's got a boyfriend, so I'm learning about the young. He's got an earring through his nostril and a cufflink through his tongue. The nuts and bolts in each eyebrow do wonders for his grin, and a little chain connects each ear to a corkscrew in his chin. I don't mind his appearance, but it does alarm my wife. He resembles nothing quite so much as a big Swiss Army knife. My daughter's got a boyfriend, and once we tune him in, on a clear night we can pick up 2 XS from Palmerston. My daughter's got a boyfriend, a magnetic sort of chap. I suppose that if she dumps him, we can sell him off for scrap.
Andrew London live, singing about his daughter's boyfriend, first heard, I think, in his band Hot Club Sandwich. Fortunately, our funniest living songwriter is still working hard with his jazz trio. Here he returns us to the humour associated with getting on a bit.
Playing up Taranaki at a bar or some such thing, for a village full of older folks who like that kind of swing. Just about to kick things off in a tempo bout like this, when a fella comes up and asks me if I'd mind him joining in. Well, he said his name was Kramer. We shook hands and said g'day. I said, well, you don't have an instrument, man. What is it that you play? He said, well, I used to play a drum kit. Of course, they don't allow that here. But I brought along some bongos, and they're underneath my chair. Well, it was counter to my instincts, and the band looked kind of grim as they shuffled round upon the stage to make some room for him. Big Hand got to 12. I said, we'll start with Stacy Bond. And he said, you just count it off, I'll play along.
You just count it off and I'll play along.
And I sing a bit, so I'll help you out if I happen to know this song. I don't see too well, I can't hear much, and I might be getting on.
But you just count it off and I'll play along.
We played Latin, we played country, we played jazz and western swing. Kramer, he was great, man, just played along with everything. Straight or syncopated, he just fit it all in somehow. Like when I forgot the words and our bongo solo now.
You just count it off and I'll play along.
And I sing a bit, so I'll help you out if I happen to know this song. I don't see too well, can't hear much, and I might be getting on.
You just count it off and I'll play along.
All right now. Find, I'll happily admit, trading solos and sweet Georgia Brown, the guy just wouldn't quit. Cracking jokes and popping out one-liners like a pro. Like when I forgot the words, he'd yell, play something that you know. And if he dropped the tempo, he'd just laugh and give a shrug and suggest to me that perhaps I might try harder to keep up. And if I missed a chord change or I fluffed a solo part, I'd hear him yell from across the stage, can I write you out a chart? So whenever we were necky bound, I'd give old Keith a call, and he'd turn up with his bongos and entertain us all, till they called to say that he'd passed away in an old folks home up there. And now to all our Taranaki gigs, we put out an extra chair.
You just count it off and I'll play along.
And I sing a bit, so I'll help you out if I happen to know the song. I don't see too well, can't hear much, and I might be getting on.
You just count it off. You just count it off. You just count it off and I'll play along.
Taranaki's bongo enthusiast lives on in the Andrew London Trio's Count It Off. And we continue the theme of becoming antique with the Folk Music Hour hero Pete Seeger.
How do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go has got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been. Old age is golden, so I've heard said, but sometimes I wonder as I crawl into bed, with my ears in a drawer, my teeth in a cup, my eyes on the table until I wake up. As sleep dims my vision, I say to myself, is there anything else I should lay on the shelf? But though nations are warring and Nixon is vexed, we'll still stick around to see what happens next. How do I know the youth is all spent? My get up and go has got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been. When I was young, my slippers were red. I could kick up my heels right over my head. When I was older, my slippers were blue, but still I could dance the whole night through. Now I'm older, my slippers are black. I huff to the store and I puff my way back. But never you laugh, I don't mind at all. I'd rather be huffing than not puff at all. How do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go has got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been. I get up each morning and dust off my wits, open the paper, read the obits. If I'm not there, I know I'm not dead, so I eat a good breakfast and go back to bed. How do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go has got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been.
Get Up and Go, from an album of Arlo Guthrie and Pete called Together in Concert. Tom Rush completes this trifecta of the pitfalls of becoming older with his remembering song.
I'm looking for my wallet and my car keys. Well, he can't have gone too far. Just as soon as I find my glasses, I'm sure I'll see just where they are. I'm supposed to meet someone for lunch today, but I can't remember where or who it is that I am meeting. It's in my organizer somewhere. I might have left it on the counter, or maybe outside in the car. Last time I remember driving was to that memory enhancement seminar. What's that far-off, distant ringing? And that strangely familiar tone must be the person I am meeting calling me on my brand-new cordless telephone. I might have left it under the covers, maybe outside on the lawn. Now I've got just one more ring to go before my answering machine kicks on. Hi, this is Tom, and your call means a lot to me. So leave a message at the tone, and I'll do my best to try to remember to call you back when I get home. Tom, this is Gwendolyn, and I'm trying not to cry. But I've been waiting here for over an hour. I thought you loved me. This is goodbye. Well, the voice sounds familiar. And the name, it rings a bell.
Let's see now, where was I?
Tom Rush getting a great response from his audience, young and old, making light of our diminishing synapses. Though one should never complain about getting old, it's a privilege not granted to us all. Politics are a rich vein of humour. The shenanigans politicians get up to are unbelievable in print, but if you can laugh and sing about them, it kind of helps. All that needs updating in this 1980 country western spoof by the Not the 9 o'clock News team is the name in the last line.
I believe that life is happy and death is sad. I believe my mom was married to my dad. I believe that things that aren't good tend to be bad. I believe, yes, I believe. I prepare to believe that Nixon wasn't a crook. I'm prepared to believe love story's a readable book.
I believe that the dirty doesn't want really dirty.
I believe that Lucille Ball's still under 30. Yes, I believe Joe Ford is clever.
That Bob Hope will live forever.
And that lever is pronounced lever. And the best film ever made is Saturday Night Fever. And say Colonel Sanders can fry. And that pigs and even DC-10s can fly.
I'm prepared to believe that things go better with Coke.
And that the Ayatollah tells a darn good knock-knock joke. I believe some folk can hear what Bugs Bunny is saying. And that Salt Lake City's a real nice place to stay in. I believe that J.R. really loves Sue Ellen. I believe that things sound better when you're yelling. And I believe that the devil is ready to repent. But I can't believe Ronald Reagan is president.
I believe. And the absurdity of the leader of the used-to-be-free world gives rise to a bucket load of humour. Bruce Nelson is getting in early about a person we thought was gone for good.
Trump is everything that Trumpers say they hate. He's a guy who's never done a hard day's work. He's the type who is an unrepentant jerk. He'd be poor if he'd not gotten cash from Dad. He would seduce your wife and never feel bad. Trump is everything his sycophants disdain. He attended just exclusive rich boy schools. He has never ever owned a set of tools. He's too pampered to even drive his own damn car. He would never buy you beers when in a bar. Trump has all the traits found in a crappy boss. He'd not pay you for your hours of overtime. He'd all but tell you, you are not as smart as I am. He would pit you against your colleagues just for fun. And then fire you before your pension's won. Nonetheless, his followers love him in measure equal to how much Trump despises them and all that they've been through. They say sometimes that beggars can't be choosers. Still, why bow down to a guy who thinks you're losers?
Bruce Nelson, who has a song bag on the subject up on YouTube, where you'll find my own contribution simply called Chump. The English language is ripe for humour. Kiwis are pretty good at it. From the nation where a cricket commentator might describe as agricultural any batter's wild shot that connects with the ball, comes the rural humour of the iconic Fred Dagg.
Have you ever thought about Hamlet? I wouldn't bother if I were you. I don't know what all the fuss is about. It's a load of rubbish. I think the guy who wrote it actually is dead now, but if he wasn't, I think he'd be in big trouble for plot stealing. Exactly the same thing happened up our way a few years back when Norm Davison knocked his brother Herb off and married Herb's old Sheila, big Brunhilde by the name of Trudy. Now, this son of his, Trev, came back one year and got a bit toey about the lack of his old bloke, and all the dogs were running for Norman, one thing and another, so he decided to approach Norm about it and have a bit of a chat and blow his head off. But Trev was a bit short in the decision-making department, and he played her out for months, thinking about it and talking to himself about the pros and cons of dispatching Norm into the land of Nod, and by the time he got round to it, the whole district was involved. His girlfriend couldn't handle it at all. Matter of fact, she fell in the river and bit the dust, as I remember. A brother tried to plant Trev, and there was a bit of a mix-up there, and they both ended up making the ultimate sacrifice. And then Trudy, I understand, got food poisoning and bit the dust, and just before he died, Trev actually did get even with Norm. I was up there, as a matter of fact, the day they were cleaning the place up. I never saw such a mess in all my life. And Barry Fortinbrough, who was a stock agent and a bit of a ratbag, he got 47,000 acres and all the wool he could eat. So if you ever see Hamlet, remember that it happened here in New Zealand first.
And Martin Carthy takes a deep breath and launches into the story.
There was this king sitting in his garden all alone, when his brother in his ear pulled a little bit of henbane, stole his brother's crown and his money and his widow. But the dead king walked and found his son and said, "Hey, listen, kiddo, I've been killed, and it's your duty to take revenge on Claudius. Kill him quick and clean and tell the nation what a fraud he is." The kid says, "Right, I'll do it, but I'll have to play it crafty, so that no one will suspect me. I'll kid on that I'm a dafty." So with all except Horatio, and he counts him as a friend, Hamlet, that's the kid, he kids on, he's round the bend, and because he isn't ready for obligatory killing, he tries to kid the king that he is tuppence off the shilling, takes the mickey out Polonius, treats poor Ophelia vile, tells Rosencrantz and Guildenstern that Denmark's not his style. Then a group of travelling actors like 784 come and do a special one-off one-night gig in Elsinore. Hamlet, Hamlet, acting balmy. Hamlet, Hamlet, loved his mommy. Hamlet, Hamlet, hesitating, wonders if the ghosts have fallen, that is why he's waiting. Now then, Hamlet wrote a scene for the players to enact, while Horatio and him could watch to see if Claudius cracked. Now the play was called The Mousetrap, not the one that's running now, and sure enough, the king walked out before the scene was through. So Hamlet's got the proof that Claudius give his dad the dose. The only problem is now that Claudius knows he knows. So while the Hamlet tells his ma that her new husband's not a fit one, Uncle Claude puts out a contract with the English king as hitman. So when Hamlet killed Polonius, the concealed corpus delicti was the king's excuse to send him for an English hempen necktie, with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern to make sure that he got there. But Hamlet jumped the boat and put the finger straight on that pair. Meanwhile, Laertes heard his dad had been stabbed through the arse. He came racing back to Elsinore, hot foot, toot sweet from Paris. And Ophelia, with her dad killed by the man she was to marry, after saying it with flowers, she committed Harry Carey. Hamlet, Hamlet, no messing. Hamlet, Hamlet, learned his lesson. Hamlet, Hamlet, Yorick's crust convinced him that men, good or bad, at last must come to dust. Then Laertes lost his place and was demanding retribution. The king says, "Keep your head and I'll provide you a solution." He arranged a sword fight for the interested parties, with a blunted sword for Hamlet and a sharp sword for Laertes. To make things double sure, the old belt and braces line, he fixed a poison sword tip and a poison cup of wine. Now the poison sword got Hamlet, but Laertes went and muffed it, 'cause he got stabbed himself and he confessed before he snuffed it. Then Hamlet's mummy drank the wine, and as her face turned blue, Hamlet says, "I quite believe the king's a baddie now, incestuous, murderous, damned Dane," he said to be precise. Then made up for hesitating by killing Claudius twice, 'cause he stabbed him with the sword and forced the wine between his lips. He said, "The rest is silence." That was Hamlet had his chips. They fired a volley over him that shook the topmost rafter, and fought in brass knee deep in Danes, lived happy ever after. Hamlet, Hamlet, all that gory. Hamlet, Hamlet, end of story. Hamlet, Hamlet, I'm on my way. If you thought that was boring, you should read the bloody play.
Martin Carthy, who did that one at an Auckland Folk Festival, with Adam McNaughton's priceless ballad, Oer Hamlet. The original is in a brogue so broad you might need subtitles.
There was this king sitting in his garden all lane, when his brother in his ear pulled a wee tit of henbane. Then he stole his brother's crown and his money and his widow. But the dead king walked and got his son and says, "Hey, listen, kiddo, I've been killed and it's your duty to take revenge on Claudius. Kill him quick and clean and tell the nation what a fraud he is." The boy says, "Right, I'll do it, but I'll need to play it crafty, so that nobody will suspect me of kidding that I'm adopted.
See what I mean? I'd love to hear what Adam might do with the Scottish play. Hey, wait a mo.
When the Scots had smashed the Norsemen like steelies against Jorries, the generals Macbeth and Banquo walked it back to Forres. They met three dames that did the kind of fortune-telling thing, who helped Macbeth and tell him he'd be Codder, Glams and King. Then Macbeth fell in a dwam, but Banquo says, hold on a wee, you've a lot to say to him, have ye got anything for me? The witches said the good news first and then the bad will tell. You'll feather lots of kings, but you'll no be one yourself. When the king said you're the hodder o' the title thane of Codder, Macbeth get fair excited and ambitious to get on, but his Johnny hurt the flare when he heard the king declare, my boy's the Prince of Cumberland and heir to the throne. Then Macbeth afore the rest went rushing hameward at full tilt, to let his wife know she wouldn't dare the king's size quilt. She says you're mad to say it, or else Duncan's off his heed, cause if he sleeps here the night he's gone, he waking up deed. Macbeth convinced himself that his motives were the best, that he wouldn't murder Duncan as his cousin, king and guest. You're a coward, you're a beast, and you don't love me, said his wife, and we'll blame it on the Gerts, as he just call me Mac the Knife. So he killed Duncan and his lady, smeared the drunken Gerts with blood, and says, come on to bed, it's easy as snuff. But Malcolm showed the craw, and so did Donald Bean and Naw, and they didn't baffle Banquo, and they didn't fool Macduff. So Macbeth invited Banquo to a feast as guest of honour, after hiring three miscreants to make sure he was a goner. And at the feast he simpered about Banquo no being there, but then he had to stun, cause Banquo's ghost was in his chair. But what made him lose his marbles was when one of the miscreants came and said they'd malkied Banquo, but they'd missed the fleeing fleance. Avaunt he starts, but Lady Max's folks, the party's closed, and you must excuse my husband, he's a wee bit indisposed. Banquo's lying upon the throne, just so obsessed his hale subconscious that he ordered them to kill Macduff's wife, Wayne Catchdog's a lot. Lady Mac says, I must try if anything that I can buy. Pearls, aerial dazzard, flash, I'll shift this bloody spot. But Macduff was off to England for to fetch back Malky, and the boy says, I'm nae use, just a randy greedy alky. Cries Macduff, my hope ends here. Malky says, I'm only kidding, I'll take an army north and cut down leaves to keep it hidden. Macbeth meanwhile decided the weird sisters to get haughty, and they fund them by own soup with tartar's lips to gee it body. They tell him he could not be killed by man that's born a woman, and he didn't need to fear till he saw Burnham Wood was coming. So Macbeth became quite gallous, and he'd nothing left but malice. He couldn't show emotions like compassion, joy or sorrow. When he heard his wife had died, he just said, I would have cried if it had been the Mora and the Mora and the Mora. Though all his pals had skied it, he was safe in Dunsinane, and he passed the time by pitting armour on and off again. Then the news that Burnham Wood was on the march gave him a scare. He says, we'll fight outside, I don't want blood o'er my flare. He was swashing, he was buckling, he talked seawards boy to death, but his confidence was shattered when Macduff shouts, hey Macbeth, against men or women born, he says, I've got divine protection. Quips Macduff, I was delivered by caesarean section. Macduff cut off his head, and when he saw that he was dead, Malky says, he's or else come on away, he schoon. So now the play is played, and there's one thing to be said, it's just half the length of Hamlet when the curtain comes down.
Totally brilliant from Adam McNaughton, the Scottish song of the Scottish play. I don't get some of it, so just as well I know the story. Some more New Zealand humour now, starting with Lynn Larkin, a song with a sunny disposition about a special and colourful Auckland city street, which locals call K Road for short.
I'm so happy on Karanga Happy Road. Finger snappy on Karanga Happy Road. At the top of the ridge you get more air, you're away from the city suits down there. It's good to say goodbye to the corporate load and to be happy on Karanga Happy Road. It's so bouncy on Karanga Happy Road. Kind of fly
rang a happy road. Don't have to dress up smart, hey, to get your cafe latte. You'll be smiling on Garanga Happy Road. It's so beguiling on Garanga Happy Road. Yeah, it's true, it's got a bit of vice, but a bit of vice and a bit of spice. You can get away from a strictly moral code and be happy on Garanga Happy Road.
Kiwiana from Lynn Larkin, whose classic At the Beach is our summer Christmas in a nutshell. I recall our other national treasure, Fred Dagg, at Christmas too, singing one my cousin taught me at school.
We three kings of Orient are, one on a tractor, two in a car, one on a scooter, tooting a hooter, following yonder star. Oh,
star of wonder, star of light, star of beauty, she'll be right, star of glory, that's the story, following yonder star.
Fred Dagg, more well known in Australia as John Clark. A rich vein of Kiwi humour owes a good deal to the Scottish ancestors of about a fifth of us. Both countries are rather pluvial, and rubber rain boots are essential. We call them gumboots, and arguably our most famous comedian's most famous song tells us about their intrinsic value. But Fred Dagg merely adapts the masterful Billy Connolly.
Sniff for your wellies, where would you be? You'd be in the hospital or infirmary, for you would have a dose of the flu or even pleurisy if you didn't have your feet in your wellies. The wellies, they're wonderful, oh wellies, they're swell, 'cause they keep out the water and they keep in the smell. And when you're sitting in a room, you can always tell when somebody takes off his wellies. Sing! If it wasn't for your wellies, where would you be? You'd be in the hospital or infirmary, for you would have a dose of the flu or even pleurisy if you didn't have your feet in your wellies. Or when you're out walking in the country with a bird, and you're strolling through the fields just like a farmer's herd, and somebody shouts, keep off the grass, you think, how absurd. And squelch, you find why farmers all wear wellies. If it wasn't for your wellies, where would you be? You'd be in the hospital or infirmary, for you would have a dose of the flu or even pleurisy if you didn't have your feet in your wellies.
That's Billy in his folk days. The Scots have a nice line in risque and bawdy comedy too. For example, there's been a lot of speculation over the centuries as to what a Scotsman wears underneath his kilt. Brian Bowers has the answer.
Well, a Scotsman clad in kilt left a bar one evening fair, and one could tell by how he walked that he'd drunk more than his share. He fumbled round until he could no longer keep his feet, and he stumbled off into the grass to sleep beside the street. Ring ding diddle diddle idio, ring da diddly io. He stumbled off into the grass to sleep beside the street. About that time, two young and lovely girls just happened by. One says to the other with a twinkle in her eye, see yon sleeping Scotsman so strong and handsome built. I wonder if it's true what they don't wear beneath the kilt. Ring ding diddle little laddie-o, ring da diddly I-o. I wonder if it's true what they don't wear beneath the kilt. They crept up on that sleeping Scotsman quiet as could be.
lifted up his kilt about an inch so they could see. And there, behold, for them to view beneath his Scottish skirt was nothing more than God had graced him with upon his birth. Ring-ding-diddle-diddle-i-di-o, ring-da-diddle-i-o, was nothing more than God had graced him with upon his birth. They marveled for a moment, then one said, we must be gone. Let's leave a present for our friend before we move along. As a gift they left a blue silk ribbon tied into a bow. Around the bonny star the Scots kilt did lift and show. Ring-ding-diddle-diddle-i-di-o, ring-da-diddle-i-o. Around the bonny star the Scots kilt did lift and show. Now the Scotsman woke to nature's call and stumbled towards the trees. Behind the bush he lifts his kilt and gawks at what he sees. And in a startled voice he says to what's before his eyes, oh, lad, I don't know where you've been, but I see you won first prize.
A well-lubricated audience appreciating Briar Boas, or Bowers. The intoxicating effect of alcohol on carbon-based life forms, as Douglas Adams puts it, is a frequent topic for humour, as in this one by the Dubliners.
Oh, as I went home on Monday night, as drunk could be, I saw a horse outside the door where my old horse should be. Well, I called me wife and I said to her, will you kindly tell to me who owns that horse outside the door where my old horse should be? Ah, you're drunk, you silly old fool. Still you cannot see. That's a lovely sow that me mother sent to me. Well, it's many a day I've travelled 100 miles or more, but a saddle on a sow sure I never saw before. And as I went home on Tuesday night, as drunk could be, I saw a coat behind the door where my old coat should be. Well, I called me wife and I said to her, will you kindly tell to me who owns that coat behind the door where my old coat should be? Aye, you're drunk, you silly old fool. Still you cannot see. That's a woolen blanket that me mother sent to me. Well, it's many a day I've travelled 100 miles or more, but buttons in a blanket sure I never saw before. And as I went home on Wednesday night, as drunk could be, I saw a pipe upon the chair where my old pipe should be. Well, I called me wife and I said to her, will you kindly tell to me who owns that pipe upon the chair where my old pipe should be? Ah, you're drunk, you silly old fool. Still you cannot see. That's a lovely tin whistle that me mother sent to me. Well, it's many a day I've travelled 100 miles or more, but tobacco in a tin whistle sure I never saw before. And as I went home on Thursday night, as drunk could be, I saw two boots beneath the bed where my old boots should be. Well, I called me wife and I said to her, will you kindly tell to me who owns them boots beneath the bed where my old boots should be? Aye, you're drunk, you silly old fool. Still you cannot see. They're two lovely geranium pots me mother sent to me. Well, it's many a day I've travelled 100 miles or more, but laces in geranium pots I never saw before. And as I went home on Friday night, as drunk could be, I saw a head upon the bed where my old head should be. Well, I called me wife and I said to her, will you kindly tell to me who owns that head upon the bed where my old head should be? Ah, you're drunk, you silly old fool. Still you cannot see. That's a baby boy that me mother sent to me. Well, it's many a day I've travelled 100 miles or more, but a baby boy with his whiskers on sure I never saw before.
The Dubliners drunk for 7 nights. seems the difficulties arising from a night on the Terps are experienced by non-human mammals as well. Dutch courage can get you into lots of bother, as Doc Watson relates.
The other night when I come in, so drunk I couldn't see, I hooked my toe in the old doormat and fell as flat as I could be. I had me a little old bottle of booze and I didn't have no more. When I fell down, the cork flew out of the bottle. It spilled it. There's a little old rat in his hiding place. He got that whiskey scent. He slipped right up and he got him a back to his hole he went. Says back to his hole he went. Back to his hole he went. He slipped right up and he got him a his drink is all. And back to his hole he went. He slipped right up to my puddle of gin and he lapped up more and more. He says, doggone my red-eyed soul, I'm gonna get drunk once more. I'm gonna get drunk once more. I'm gonna get drunk once more. He says, doggone my red-eyed soul, I'm gonna get drunk once more. He washed his face with his front paws and on his hind legs sat. And he's getting pretty high when he winked one eye and he says, hey, where's that old tomcat? Now, where's that old tomcat? I said, where's that old tomcat? He's getting high when he winked one eye and he says, hey, buddy, where's that old tomcat? I can lick him and his brother. The old tomcat come a-slipping and dashed over to the middle of the floor. The cat jumped over and the rat got sober and he never got drunk no more. He didn't get drunk no more. No, he never got drunk no more. The cat jumped over and the rat got sober, the poor little feller, and he never got drunk no more.
A salutary lesson perfectly taught by the great Doc Watson. Time to go. Some laughs for you, we trust. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Folk Music Hour, a weekly broadcast on Access Radio Taranaki. Thanks to New Zealand On Air, Irirangi Te Motu. All our shows are available to podcast. Just search for Folk Music Hour. Kia ora.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.